Okay, today we're going to be speaking about the qualifications for someone to be a Shaykh or a Boydik. The first few Simanim Shulchan Aruch speak about these kind of halachas. We're going to focus on five specific traits that we're going to be looking at. There are many more. There are other ones. We're going to focus on five, which we can summarize in the following sentence. The person needs to be a Jewish man who knows appropriate halachas, possesses the necessary skill, and has Yirat Shamayim. And we're going to break it up into five different parts and see what each of those mean. And generally, the information, excuse me, what we're going to be speaking about are things that relate to the Shaykhit and the Boydik, but who checks for Sirchas, to check the animal's not Shefa. There are also Menachrim and Mashgichim, for whom there are requirements, but not as strict or as significant as there are for these, the Shaykhit and the Boydik. So the first is, the person needs to be a Jew. Most of the poskim consider someone who's not Jewish to be pasul midaraisa. There's also all kinds of discussions about which people are considered mumrim to the point that they, or other kinds of people like that who might be disqualified because they're not considered Jewish. But in a commercial shrita, no one would dream of hiring anybody who had these kind of questions on them. You have to be way past that to be even considered. But one question has came up about a group called the B'nai Israel. It's a group of people from India, quite a large group of people from India. And for years, for decades, maybe 50, 60, 70, I don't know how many years, even, and when you actually go back even further, there have been challenges about how, whether those people are Jewish or not. They claim to be Jewish. They claim to have been there for hundreds or thousands of years. They have practices that seem familiar to Jewish people, but there's also lots that they don't know, and lots that they don't do that we would consider to be basics. And the official position of the Rabbanut, Eretz Yisrael, which is where the main Shaila relates to, is they accept them as Jewish, not everybody agrees with that. Some people require them to have a Giyur L'Chumra, some people don't accept them at all, I guess unless they have a complete full Geirus. Some require that they should have shown that for many generations they've been part of the Jewish community. Reese thought that what we should do, this question came to the CRC, Reese thought what we should do is we should follow what Moshe said, which was that they should do Giyur L'Chumra. Therefore, once they did a Giyur L'Chumra, we would consider the person to be Jewish. Now, a little question that comes up with Giyur L'Chumra. Giyur L'Chumra means is we accept that you're Jewish, but to confirm it, we make that the person has to do with the Geirus. So that's fine for himself. Once he's finished, he has had his Giyur L'Chumra. But what about his wife? If we require the person wants to be the shochet to do Giyur L'Chumra, his wife, who didn't have that Giyur L'Chumra, is potentially considering possibly not Jewish. So, of course, if a sheikh, we'll talk later about Yirat Shamayim, if a sheikh is married to someone who wasn't Jewish, then he wouldn't be qualified to be a sheikh. That would bring into question his Yirat Shamayim. But in this case, that's not correct, because here, he considers her Jewish in his mind, and everyone, for his community, considers her to be perfectly fine to be married to, so there's nothing lacking in his commitment to doing the right thing. We might personally not accept her as Jewish without a Giyur L'Chumra, but from his perspective, it doesn't take away from his Yirat Shamayim. And these kind of questions are very sensitive. People have to be very careful and delicate in how they investigate these kind of questions, because we're talking about someone, in his mind, he's perfectly 100% Jewish, and once we start looking into it, it has to be just done delicately and with sensitivity. Most of the shadows that came up in the shadows of Yisrael, and the shadows in the Poskim have to do with shadows of Mamzeiros, possibilities that generations back there were divorces that weren't done properly, but that's not relevant to us. For us, we just need to know if the person is Jewish. And again, with the Giyur L'Chumra, like Ramosha says, then we're comfortable that now the person is Jewish, he can be a sheikh. Get the second requirement, that should be a man. So the Ikra din is that ladies are kosher for Shechita, Shulchan Aruch brings now. But the Ramah says the minhag is that we don't allow women to be Shechitim. And I mentioned it just in fact, that's what everybody does. There are barely any women altogether in a slaughterhouse, but for sure not a shechtim. And it's worth noting the Living Torah Museum has in it a Kabbalah, a letter written out for a woman in 1931 in Italy, when it was difficult, to find shechtim. And this lady was given permission by the rabbi of the town that for 1 year she has permission to be a shechtim for oifis, for birds. And only on condition that there are no men around or there's no meat able to be gotten that was shechted as it would usually be by a man. So here was a case where it was obviously a shas atchav. There was no way to get meat, and so they said ikar din is that a lady's kasher for shechita. So they gave her very limited and very specific permission to shecht in that case in order to provide meat for people. Okay, we now move on to the third one, and that is that the person needs to be knowledgeable. Okay, so the Shulchan Aruch says that if a person wants to be a shechita, he needs to know the chamei shechita for shechita. He needs to know the five halachos of shechita, of course. He has to know, in Shulchan Aruch says that even if he doesn't know every detail, as long as he knows what he has to ask about, he understands that this is a question I need to ask a shayla, and he doesn't ever say that something that was really awesome, he really calls it mutter, he knows when he has to the shayla, that's good enough. The Rama says that he gives a little more details about what the shaykh is supposed to know. He has to know the five of the shechita, he has to know how to check a chalaf, and check the simanis of shechita, and he has to check how to check a reya. Okay, and the Rama then sticks in that, when we say that he has to know halachas, that doesn't mean he just has to know halachas, he has to know minhagim equal to halachas. Minhagim and halacha in this case are the same. And he doesn't say what he means specifically, but an example of that would be is that the Midin HaGemara and the din of the Shulchan Aruch is that a shehiya, if you pause during the shechita, a shehiya is possible, makes the animal a nevela, but if Meikar HaDin, you can pause for quite some time, so to speak, relatively a long time, before the animal becomes an available. All kinds of din that Shulchan Aruch speaks about the details based on the Gemara. But the Rama says the minig by us is that we don't allow even the smallest shehiyah, no matter what part of the shechita, no matter how short it was, any shehiyah at any time makes the animal into an available. So that's an example of a minig. And if the Sheikh didn't know that minig, then he's missing something crucial. For us Ashkenazim, he's missing something crucial. And that's what it seems as kind of thing the Rama means when he says is a minig and a halacha are the same in this case. Okay, now the Rama then sticks in another thing. He says that the minig is also that we require the person to have a kabbalah. Meaning it shouldn't be just that he knows the halachos and the other things we're going to talk about, but he needs to actually get an official permission from someone to be a sheikhid. And the Rama says some places even require that in writing, an official written document that says this person is qualified to be a sheikhid. Now, then the Rama adds on yet another thing. He says, if not enough that he knew the halachas, and not enough that he has the official, one time he passed a bechina to be able that he knows enough halachas, but the Rama says, lefrakim, occasionally, he needs to chaz these halachas over, to make sure that he stays in his mind. He uses, yishkurim befiv, believer shalai yishkechem, and Simcha Dasha says, that means that he should do it once every 30 days, he should review Hilchos Shechita, and different people have organized different methods of how to a sheikh to review all Hilchos Shechita, the main part of Hilchos Shechita, Hilchos Bedika, every 30 days, because it needs to be fresh in their mind. They need to remember the halachas that they're taking care of. Okay, so now there's a little bit of a related question that comes up as follows. In meat, in all kinds of kashrus areas, but meat in particular, there's the following issue. If one person has a different psak, or a different way of acting as far as an area of halacha, so he does what he was told, or what his family or his community does, and other people do what they do. But in kosher meat, I'm sort of at the mercy of the sheikh and the baidik, which is to say is, let's say there's a baidik who would accept sirchas that our community would not accept. So he's going to say the meat is kosher, and we would not accept that meat is kosher. So when I want to get meat from him, I sort of can't. How do I follow my own practice, my own psak of what I'm supposed to do? I'm dependent on him. So the simple thing to do is for the person to find a shechita or a community that does shechita that meets their standard. So I know that I follow this. This is my standard. I know I follow this is my standard, and I buy my meat or get my meat from a shechit or from a hashgacha that does the same thing, that he also meets that standard. That's okay, and that's good and well. But what happens when the shechit or the boitik and the Rav Machshir themselves don't have the same standard? Like, for example, the Rav Machshir is stricter about what he considers to be pesiyasif or chalat. Which sirchus does he let pass as being considered to be pesiyasif or chalat? And the baidik himself, he has a lesser standard. In his mind, even other things could pass by. Okay, so now what happens? Can we accept the baidik's word? Now, if you think the Rav Machshir and the baidik is saying, yes, this meat qualifies as Beis Yosef, but the Rav Masher and the Shait and the Bodhi don't have the same, so to speak, standards of what is considered a Beis Yosef, a piece of meat that qualifies as Beis Yosef. So should we say he's a Shomer Shabbos, he's a person with nemanos, we should believe him, or should we say he doesn't care about these things, to him it doesn't mean anything, whether it has that tzir or not, because to him those are all qualifies as Beis Yosef. So the general rule is, as a rule, we would trust a person, even if he personally keeps to a lower standard, and it comes up in other issues also. It comes up in, I don't know, the Mashgiach doesn't keep Kol Yisrael, or the Mashgiach doesn't mock them in Yashin, but he's giving Kashkaf on that kind of a thing. If he tells you that it's Kol Yisrael, or it's Yashin, or in our case, it's the meat is based on God, then you're allowed to trust him. And the real, you could see this, it didn't in the Ramah in Sim Kofi Tess, who says the following. If someone is machped on something because he thinks the din is like that, he doesn't think it's the din, but he wants to be machmir for himself. So here's a person who's taking a stricter stand. He's allowed to eat with people who are not machmir. That means even not only if I'm machmir on it, but even if I think the ikur hadin, you have to be machmir on that thing. Those people will not give me something that I consider Isser, even though they themselves are not Machmir. So you see from here that if one person has a lower standard, but he's giving food to somebody else who has the higher standard, then he's trusted to be careful about that. And if he says the food is Beis Yosef, or it's Chol Yisrael, or Yashin, or whatever the other standard that he's saying it is, that even though he personally is not Machmir, if he wants to tell you that meat or that food meets your standard, he's trusted to say that. Okay, now we move on to our fourth issue. And that is that is the skill of the shechet. So, as I mentioned, the Ramah says the minhag is that a person needs to have a Kabbalah in order to be a shechet. They should not just know the dinim, they need to have Kabbalah. A chacham has to tell them or write out for them that they are qualified to do that. And the Ramah says he should also check that the person has the skill to do the job as well also. Because, you know, a big part of being a sheikh or a baidik is not just the technical knowledge of the book knowledge, but also the physical, the dexterity and the ability to do the act that you have to do. So, and in fact, nowadays, in a lot of places, the person who does the testing on the knowledge, it's not the same person who does the testing on the skill. They take a seasoned, experienced shaykh or boydik to check that this person really has the skill that he needs, and he does that part of it, and then he reports back to the chacham who gives the test on the book knowledge, you know, shachs and taz, and see if he knows the chamish hilchos and shchita. And then that person, the chacham, is the one who writes it, but he's counting on the expert, the experienced person, to check on the actual skill. Okay, so before Shkita became so commercialized, when a person got a Kabbalah, the Kabbalah was for, he was a full service person. He did everything. He was shechted, he was a shechted, he was a boy. He did gases and doctors and oifles. He did everything. That was he was the town shechted, or he was the shechted for an area, and he did everything. He was called in a shechted boy. He was a shechted boy. Okay, but nowadays, as things have become more commercialized, what's happened is people have become more specialized in what they do also. And they may only either have an official Kabbalah, or even if they have a Kabbalah for everything, they may only have the experience to do one. For example, there are people who are only chef birds, and they're only chef animals, or they're amazing at B'dikas Pim. That's all they do. They just sit and do B'dikas Pim all the time, or B'dikas Chutz, or B'dikas Kreisim we spoke about the other time, or they only check Tumas Egidin. That they become like their expertise, and that's like sometimes that's even a staffing issue. I can remember a specific case where there was a shchita that worked. It was very fast. There was many animals per hour. And in that shchita, almost every time there was a specific shechet assigned for the shechita and a specific person for the B'dikas Pinim, because you needed a certain kind of experience and expertise to handle the speed that was going on in there, which those people were perfect for. Okay. So now, so that has to do with the skill. But nowadays, people have become not just that they get a one-time a Kabbalah for things, but they tend, some people, and they're being very, very good at a specific thing, and that's what the focus is on. Now, one last thing is that the Gilui Marshal says at the beginning of Hilchos Shchita, he brings, for those who have a minute, that a practice that when a shechet reaches 80 years old, they no longer let him shecht. That's because at that point he says his hands begin to shake, and he may not be able to have the same skill that he always had when he was younger. But the Gemara Mishnah says that he doesn't think you're mechuyav to do that. He brings others who see, you know, case by case, decide whether the person is qualified. There's also there's a quote from Satan Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan, the earlier Satan Rebbe, who said that shechting at 70 years old should stop shechting. And there are those actually in practice who do that. Nowadays, you have to just be careful for the legality of it. There's something called the Age Discrimination and Employment Act, ADEA, that may make that illegal under certain circumstances to fire someone based on their age. But such is the practice some shechitas have, that they only allow someone to shecht until a certain age. Our last thing we need to speak about is Yerushalayim. So all the criteria we spoke about before in the first four things are, of course, important. But the most focus and the most attention tends to go to this criteria of, does the person who is doing the shechita have the appropriate Yerushalayim to serve as the shechit or the baidik for our food? The way the Simcha Kadosh says is, ha-ba-luta ruchos ala shechita, he wants to get a Kabbalah Rashi's Chochma Yachmarala. The first thing you should check into is in Darko Misukanim, the Yiras Hashem upon him. You want to make sure that he has a Yerushalayim. And the reason is because some of the decisions that this person is going to be making for us are very, very delicate. I mentioned before about making a tiny shahiyah. You want to check if a chalaf is clean. You want to check did you shech right with the veshet in the right place. The badika, the sircha, is it this kind, is it kesidron, is it, where is it, exactly what's going on? These are very delicate decisions, and as fine and delicate as those decisions are, there's a lot riding on them. There's all kinds of people who are potentially eating the vela or trefa if a person doesn't do it correctly. So we need a person who has Yerushalayim to be able to make those decisions in an honest and correct way, not either being too swift and quick about it and not paying attention, and also not being swayed to make more animals kosher just for whatever reason he has. And Rabbi Yonah in Shari Tshuva has a long paragraph about this, and Shulchan Aruch thinks part of it, who says over there, in Shulchan Aruch, the part that he quotes is that you need a lot of Yerushalayim in order to do Bedikas Sasakin. He says sometimes it takes 2-3 times of checking the Chalaf before you notice a Pegima that's in it. How well you're going to feel those little nicks in the knife has to do with how much you pay attention and how much you're focusing on it, and that's a function of Yerushalayim. There's a story. The Shachas Maram is at it, and then the Prima Godin brings the details of it. There was once Erev Yom Kippur, and they were shechting for Kaparis, and the Shechit came to the Marshal with his chalaf, and the Marshal says, is this chalaf ready for using? Is it good for shechting? And the Shechit said, yeah, it's perfectly fine. And the Marshal checked it, and he found the pegim in it. Chagiris and Tzipari, he found a pegim in it. So he gave it back to the Shechit. The Shechit checked it, chick-chocky checked it, it's perfect, no problem. So the Marshal again checked it, he found the pegim, as did someone else who was sitting there. So as an example, someone who wasn't taking his work seriously, in the sense that he wasn't noticing that there was a pegima in there, and of course the outcome of that is very serious. Potentially there's a pegima in the animals and the vela because of that. Now, even though I just told you all these reasons and all these people who talk about having Yerushalayim, at the same time, really the din is more limited than it might seem. And that's the proof of that is, for example, is you look at the Shulchan Aruch in Simon Beis, says that if a person is a mumer l'teyavon, that means that he's a mumer who does things l'teyavon, where to his benefit, he's a person who does the right thing, but when it's easy, when he has what to benefit from it, he will be over on an iser. That person could shech l'chadchila. Now, the Rama disagrees, but the Shulchan Aruch says that the mutter l'chadchila for that person to shech, as long as someone checked his knife for him. Okay? The din is a shikr. Unless he's really seriously drunk, most of shikr could shech. The Rama, at the end of Simon Beis, tells you should know, a monkey is not kosher for shechita. Okay, this is what it's from. After the monkey is like a... He's like someone who's not a yid. He's not kosher for shechita. I mean, like, really? So you think that the monkey has Yerushalayim and the shikr is able to pay attention to what he's doing, and the mumu, the oven, all these people, these are people who have what we would think of Yerushalayim, that focus and paying attention to do things right. So what it appears is that when these early Pesukim speak about Yerushalayim, they're talking about for the specific acts that need that fine thing. Like, for example, like I mentioned, the Mumuti oven, he could check, but someone has to check this challah first, because we don't trust him to check the challah. Like in the story of the Marshal, we don't trust him to check the challah, but we trust him for everything else. So, in those, we have needs for Yerushalayim for specific things, but Lav Dafka, with the Ikra, didn't require for every, that in every pride, so to speak, to be a Yerushalayim. But that's all might be the din. That might be right or wrong about what the din is, but in practice, that's not what goes on. In practice, people who run hashgachas, people who oversee shchita, are very sensitive and very careful to find people who have Yerushalayim through and through in all areas of alley practice. And they want a person who they know they could trust this person to shech, to be voided, as per what people are expecting. Now, that's true in a general sense. But the thing is that there's a little bit of a subjectivity to this. And Rabbanim and Machshirim each have their own ideas of certain exterior qualities or exterior things that you could see on the outside that say that's a judge whether the person is is he a Yerushalayim? Like, for example, is he a chassid of a specific rebbe, or is he chassid at all? Okay, is he? Did he learn in Kollel? Does his wife drive? Does he vote in Israeli elections? Does he use the internet? Does he use an unfiltered internet? Okay, those things that I just said are all things that there are actual rabbanim machshirim that for them that's the criteria to whether a person should be a sheikhet or not be a sheikhet. Those are criteria whether the person has the right Yerushalayim to be the job. Now, some people think, well, the pashut, of course, each one of those things, yeah, the thing that we care about, that's the ikka, that's really important. And other people think it's silly or petty to care about that thing. So it's unfortunate that what happens is that sometimes we get a person gets so focused on something exterior like this or something like that, and a really wonderful sheikh or poitig is therefore not going to be taken for a job, even though he's really very qualified, because of some exterior issue. That says, oh, if he does that, then he can't be qualified. He can't work as a sheikh or a rabbi. So one last thing is, what is very common, it's a very common requirement, is to say to it that a sheikh needs to go to the mikveh each morning, or at least on the mornings when he shechts. And some people present that as a Yerushalayim point, as a sign of a person who's careful about Kedusha and wants to feel as Ezra, even though I'm not mukhir too. But the truth is also that the Sefer Tyrus HaKadosh and the Kuzari, who's similar, who says that that the truth is that a person whose title that person has a better sense with his fingers when he wants the feel to check that the challah is smooth, and therefore a person needs to be tayvul if he wants to be a sheikh, if he wants to be boiding his challah before he should check. That's the thing that he needs to do in order to do his job properly. So in a sense, this is going back to what the sort of real original need for Yerushalayim is. We want to make sure he does his job properly. We want to make sure, specifically mentioned many times in the Pesukim, is that he checks his halach properly. So that being tovel is not just a sign of Kedusha and a sign of Yerushalayim, but actually turns out to be something that has to do with being truly qualified to be a sheikh, to do a better job of what he's doing.